To our elders who
That's
teach us.
That's not what I meant to play. Let's try this one and see if this works. Nah, I don't think that's it either. All right, well, somewhere around here is the hunk, and I'll play it shortly. But meanwhile, we'll go to that and not waste any time. Mark's here. Mark, give us some announcements, please.
Well, United for a Fair Economy is presenting its popular economics education workshops on weekday evenings this fall. This Tuesday, October 12th, from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30, they'll present their workshop, The Growing Divide, The Roots of Economic Insecurity, which reviews recent changes in income and wealth distribution, and lays out some strategic initiatives and immediate steps we can take to reverse the growing gap between the rich and everyone else. Again, that was Tuesday. That's this coming Tuesday, October 12th. Also, next Tuesday, October 19th at 6:30, Bankers, Brokers, Bubbles, and Bailouts, The Causes and Consequences of the Financial Crisis, a workshop aimed at activists, students, workers, and anyone interested in a more equitable economy. Learn about the housing bubble and the financial meltdown and the impact of the crisis on jobs, families, and communities. All workshops will be held at the UFE office at 29 Winter Street, second floor, near Downtown Crossing in Boston. Space is limited to 20 participants, so RSVP soon, which RSVPs are required. Visit www.faireconomy.org for more information.
Okay, thanks. Let's see what this does. All right, we're honking. The fifth Honk Festival, a festival of activist street bands taking back the streets for horns and feet. Did I get that right? Takes place this Friday night, which is tonight. Tomorrow, all day in Davis Square. And Sunday with a parade from Davis to Harvard. And Sunday night, a blowout all-band concert bash at the Somerville Theater. For more information, visit honkfest.org. And that's all I'm going to say about that. And we'll just play some honk music. You got one more?
Well, this Sunday is the National Day of Action for Climate Change Awareness. Join 350.org from 2 to 8 p.m. for an open house at the J.P. Greenhouse, a zero-carbon demonstration home and garden in Jamaica Plain, which also serves as the hub for 350.org in Boston. There will be a variety of activities and demonstrations, a meal, and an evening presentation, discussion, and song. Come for the whole day or any part of it. From 2 to 5 p.m., be creating climate graffiti on the sidewalk, help build stone walls in the garden, take a tour of the JP greenhouse, and much more. From 5 to 8 p.m., there'll be dinner, climate chorus, discussion, and songs with Ken Ward and Dean Stevens. It's free and open to all. Children are welcome. That's this Sunday, October 10th, at 133 Bourne Street in Jamaica Plain. For more information, visit jpgreenhouse.org or call 617-512-3502.
Huh. Okay. Next weekend is the second annual Boston Book Festival. No, I take that back. Tomorrow, Saturday, October 16th. No, that is next weekend. Never mind. This Sunday, how about that? Encuentro Cinco will be hosting an environmentally friendly work party called Deeper Shade of Green, Reorganizing a Boston Movement Building Community Space. That's this Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. Help them increase the energy efficiency of the lighting and the computer lab, rationalize networks and wiring, and remove excess and obsolete equipment. And paint. Make the place a more aesthetically pleasing space. Actually, I don't see anything about paint. It just says use your creativity and artistic skills, but I'm assuming paint. Anyway, all that action ends with a reception from 5 to 7 p.m., so it's all day Sunday. For more information about Encuentro Cinco, which is a wonderful space to spend time, encuentro5.com. www.climatechangeawareness.org. And indeed, we are all out of time. Thank you, Mark. Thank you to our guests this evening. Thank you to the human beings who are coming up next. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. Human beings are up very, very soon. Meanwhile, honk to you and yours, and have a good weekend. Peace.
Welcoming words. There are rubber bands tonight. But what is in the band? I welcome tonight Zorro the numerologist. Welcome, Zorro.
Hello, everyone.
Zorro.
Yes.
Why is the band made of rubber?
The springing action, I believe it comes from the rubber and hence the name. It returns to its own form when pushed to extremum.
Well, returning also in form is Aurora, vocal therapist. Welcome, Aurora.
Thank you for having me on the show.
It is only too wonderful to have you with us.
Of course. And of the rubber band, everything in the world is like this. Everything can be stretched and molded, but in the end, returns back to the original state. We are all but transitions, transient motions.
We move one way and then move another. But what in life causes us to stretch?
As inner implosions can cause large rocks to burst from one another, so do our strifes, our actions, our good deeds. They all perturb the system of the rubber band, and they cause it to stretch. They cause it to ripple as the waves of time and space, and then bend back slowly and gracefully or quickly to the original. And so this is such a beautiful to me, a beautiful way of viewing our experience on Earth and in this universe. For our actions are in the end, they make no difference because the universe remains as it is. So why do we even attempt our actions? And the answer is, it is our actions that cause the transient motions, and without the transient motions, everything is bare and unchanging.
In your point of view, the end of the universe will look very much like the beginning.
In a metaphorical sense, there is no end or beginning. There only is the now and the always, bending upon itself, also quite like a rubber band.
And I think an extension of the philosophy you describe is that the end of life is similar to the beginning of life.
From oblivion we spring, and back to oblivion we can fold back. We can become the particles in the grass and in the trees and in the air from which we sprung.
Yes, I think it highlights life as a cycle.
There are a lot of cycles, and I think one of the greatest cycles is that here we are in the studio, and we are giving out our sounds and our thoughts, but we love to hear those thoughts bounce off of your brain and come back to us through telephonically or spiritually. So if you'd like to call and be the snap in the rubber band, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
Yes, I had a question. I actually recently got orthodontia. I got braces on my teeth, including rubber bands in the back. And I was hoping that I could seek the assistance of Aurora, because I find that it's difficult for me to speak, especially the S and sh, these types of sounds. And so my voice is actually completely different without my consent or assent, and I'm finding this is a source of spiritual struggle for me.
Well, caller, this is a very common experience, and I've seen it very often. And the problem is that a foreign body is in your mouth. It is reshaping your teeth. And in that, it is going to take all of your effort to learn how to form your tongue and your teeth around this foreign object. You must acclimate, like the rubber band. You must be able to spring and change instead of snapping. And so I would suggest for you to listen to yourself, to record yourself, and to try the different noises until you hear what you like to hear, and then train yourself to speak in that fashion.
I think it's very similar to the experience that the newborn feline experiences in the classic experiment where the cat's eyelids are sewn shut immediately after birth, and compared to the adult cat whose eyelids are sewn after birth, but in adulthood, of course. The difference, of course, is that after a year, the eyelids are unsewn, allowed to open, and light is permitted to enter. The newborn cat and the adult cat both immediately are blind. However, the adult cat recovers his vision, whereas the newborn cat remains blind for life. Now, you have adapted a particular way of moving the muscles of the tongue, throat, and lips to produce sounds. You have to adapt.
I will take that under advisement, particularly recording myself. I think that would be a useful strategy. I'm concerned less, actually, with the physical reshaping of my voice and speaking than with the spiritual side. I like to do a kind of meditation that draws on the Taoist tradition, in which certain sounds and ways of breathing are associated with certain body parts and certain humors. And there's a sound that is associated with the lungs and with confidence, and is, you know, to psych yourself up, I'll sometimes say, before I have to go give a presentation. And it comes out sometimes, though, that if I'm trying to say the shh noise for the spleen and stomach, which is about a very different sort of emotion, that it will come out as the lungs, and I will be activating my lungs instead of my spleen. And so I feel like this is throwing me off spiritually and bodily, as well as in terms of basic communication.
Well, caller, first off, I'm very glad that you are using these types of meditation to shape your spirit and to help you acclimate. But you must remember that apart from the pure physicality of the air emanating from your lungs and the stance of confidence that you require to make that sound, that the really wonderful thing, the benefit of this type of meditation, is to think within yourself and to feel the area that you are trying to meditate upon, feel it react, and to force it to react in a way. So there may be other sounds, and often it's a very personal thing. I know that there are many guides which suggest different sounds for different body parts or for different emotions, and they can be very universal. But it is also very useful to understand which noises mean what to you personally, and how to allow yourself to connect with new sounds.
Let's bring another voice in to share this with us. Caller 2, marhaba.
Hello.
Yes, welcome, caller.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I must confess, I'm out of range right now of the station, so I'm really not sure what the conversation is. But this is my favorite radio show, so I figured I'd call in. Hopefully I can merge right in.
Well, thank you so much for joining us from the great distance. Where are you traveling now, caller?
Well, right now I'm deep in the Nevada desert, and I'm calling into a satellite phone. I came out here several weeks ago for a festival, and I just really never left.
That is a marvel of technology.
I do have some sophisticated technology at my disposal.
Can you tell us about the spirituality of the place? We were just discussing the spirituality of rubber bands and what we can learn from them, how they are similar to life.
Rubber bands. Well, I mean, were you focusing primarily on the elasticity of the rubber band? I think that's a beautiful spiritual metaphor for flexibility and form yet formlessness.
Yes, I think this puts us in harmony. Yes.
What were your thoughts? I'm just curious the angle that you were taking.
Well, certainly the elasticity. I think the idea of naturally understanding that there is a tension when things are pushed and pulled, and there is a natural desire to respond with a return to a basic form.
Mm-hmm.
But also the idea that the loop is closed. We do not have in office supply stores. They do not sell
rubber strips
or ribbons, because there is a usefulness in the closure.
That's for certain.
In the loop.
A rubber strip would be of little or no value if I'm trying to imagine the value of a rubber strip if it were not bounded in some fashion.
Perhaps as a projectile.
Perhaps as a projectile. But now that taking that metaphor one step forward, would we as a people, is there not an inherent tendency for us to use our spirituality in the wrong way, use it as a projectile or as an offensive, as a weapon? And that's something that I've seen many people, myself included, I've seen people make that mistake.
Well, caller, this metaphor works beautifully, for if you snap the chakra, the rubber band, if you break it, then you are left with nothing but a weapon.
Yes, that's brilliant.
And I think this outward direction of spirituality, it can be done in a healthy way. But I think ultimately it must return. It must be an internal thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we can discuss it fruitfully.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there is a great great statement of wisdom which was made, which is that self-righteousness is not religion. Though we are not discussing religion particularly, I think there is a point that is made here.
Now I'm sure you're all familiar with the Mobius band, the Mobius strip.
Yes.
I've never seen one manufactured in such a manner, at least not intentionally, from the rubber band factory, say, but would you envision any practical application for a Mobius rubber band, or spiritual?
Well, metaphysically speaking, it perhaps contributes to the wholeness if a band has only one side. So it perhaps makes the rubber band metaphor a little more literal.
Well, let's, in an effort to continue closing the loop, let's bring another voice on the air. If anyone would like to join, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, welcome to the air.
Hello. I have a question for you.
Yes, caller.
I derive an incredible amount of pleasure from cutting up rubber bands. What is that? Is there something wrong with me?
I think
I like to cut them up into little pieces.
Well, if somebody asked you, do you prefer to chop up your soul, that would be an entirely different question. And so I think that the rubber band is a metaphor for us right now, but if you prefer to cut it, it's a simple pleasure. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yes, I believe that finding some horrible interpretation of your actions is stretching the metaphor a little too much. But there are so many things that can be satisfying by breaking the elasticity, by breaking the whole. In a way, you are releasing a certain amount of tension, and rather than letting it break your spirit, your spiritual rubber band, you are physically releasing this tendency.
Now, caller, do you find it cathartic to destroy the band, and does this destruction extend to other facets of your life?
I find it... Sorry, I'm hearing you.
Caller, is it cathartic? Do you find a release in destroying the band? See, I think that it could be perfectly benign, but I think it is also possible that it is a pathological thing.
I wonder if she derives the same amount of pleasure cutting other people's rubber bands as she does her own.
I don't know. I've never cut anyone else's rubber band. The thing is that if you give me a rubber band, that's immediately what I'm going to want to do with it is cut it up into little pieces. It just makes an amazing noise, and I just really like it, and I've liked it ever since I was little.
Now, caller, I have a question. Is there a preferred number of pieces into which you would cut the rubber band?
I cut it into as many pieces as possible.
Have you ever considered taking an extreme and burning the band?
I've burned the rubber band. It doesn't smell very good.
Or perhaps to use it with a cheese grater or some other disintegration device.
No, I haven't done that, but I don't think that would be as satisfying as cutting it individually.
A food processor.
That's kind of funny.
Now, caller, is it all loops in life? Do you have the same pleasure in squid or other circular foods?
Cutting it or eating it?
Well, the actions, unless you consume these foods in a strange way, are one and the same.
Do you prefer to cut a donut or a bagel?
Or a Funyun, for that matter.
A Funyun, yes.
I don't put in the entire Funyun in my mouth. It does get broken in half.
But do you derive pleasure from this action? Or do you associate the pleasure of the rubber band with the rubbery? In fact, perhaps, instead of the loop.
I think I do like breaking circular objects. It is
now,
true.
Even brittle objects, or is it... concentrated primarily on the elastic objects?
Well, Funyuns are not elastic.
That's the antithesis of elastic.
Yeah.
But Funyuns are clearly much more satisfying to eat than elastics.
And
that's true.
I don't think anyone's going to deny that.
That is true.
I'm very curious also, do you have... about the caller's earlier question, do you feel that you would take more or less pleasure in cutting and destroying a Mobius rubber band?
You know, the intriguing piece of this question is that only the first cut would be different, after which the Mobius rubber band becomes the same as the ordinary office supply.
That's exactly correct, but the first cut is something inherently profound about cutting. When you cut, basically, you're in one action creating... something finite from something that is infinite.
So I think I would like to do that.
the Mobius band thing.
That seems like that would be incredibly satisfying. Destroying a Mobius rubber band.
I'm starting to see things your way.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you can find a source for Mobius rubber bands, I think you and I can get together and have a little party.
I love it.
You know, you with me
Funyuns,
on that one?
I like it. We could have Funyuns, calamari, Mobius rubber bands.
I wonder if there exists squid such that the calamari would be Mobius band shaped.
Perhaps a topological food source, yes.
And caller, I also wonder if you have considered taking a length of pipe and cutting slices, forming rings, and then cutting each of the rings.
Pipe lighters?
Yeah, further extension or a tube. Is there a tube-like food?
I don't know. I think I'm just bored all the time.
Yeah.
Well, caller, your hands and your ears, I believe they crave stimulation. I believe this is what is going on. The sound of the Funyun being crunched, the sound of the rubber band as it twangs as you clip it.
And I tear up paper. Any paper that anyone gives me, I like to tear it up.
You know, I don't mean to be presumptuous, but perhaps you are exploring the destruction of external objects in an attempt to stave off perhaps some internal destruction you are feeling.
Or perhaps it is merely a larger sense of ennui that is driving you to tear things in absence. Do you actively tear these things, or do you realize that you have been tearing them?
I think I'm just bored a lot of the time. And I'm multitasking. I'm listening to someone talk, and I'm tearing up a piece of paper at the same time.
Maybe while you're tearing up the piece of paper, you are... it's the boredom with your conversation. It's basically you're tearing up the person with whom you're having the conversation.
Oh.
Metaphysically, I mean, you know... But,
well, this actually ties into one of the vocal practices I have my patients do.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, no problem, caller. That is to do different actions with their hands as they converse with someone, and to listen, to play back the tones of voices that they have when they do this. And when you are doing something that is more destructive, you tend to use angrier words and sharper tones. Whereas if you were to simply dip your hand in water, for example, then you would have a more fluid conversation.
That is an interesting point.
Connor, I wonder if you have experimented, and if you have not, if I may assign this as a homework, that you might consider doing the opposite of what you are doing. That is, instead of cutting, perhaps take strands or rope and to make knots in the rope.
Assembling, huh?
Assembling, precisely.
That's an interesting
point. That may be therapeutic. Or have you ever attempted to rub the top of your head in a clockwise direction while simultaneously rubbing your belly with the opposite hand in the counterclockwise direction?
I can't do that.
I can't do that either.
But I guess that could entertain me, but I wouldn't be able to listen to whatever anyone was saying.
Yes, this is certainly a sign of the universal difficulties in life.
Well, the only way in which the universe is not symmetric is in handedness.
That's true, chirality.
And I think that this is a way, however, this duality between assembling and destruction is a way that one can harvest from the fields of the universe, from the dreams of justice that we all have. And caller, I wonder if you have also performed a meditation.
No, I don't meditate.
So I would just be curious if you try to clear your mind, what images would form.
Right now?
Now or...
Because I'm driving right now. I don't know if it's a good time to meditate.
So not now, but at some later time, and then perhaps you could call us and report.
Okay. Okay, well, it was nice talking to you guys.
Thank you so much for being with us, caller.
Namaste.
Okay. Good night.
That was fascinating.
If anyone else would like to call and join in, the number is 617-253-8810, and we'll find out if that band is a Möbius or is it other type of rubber band. Let's bring another caller in now. Caller 5, marhaban. Caller, welcome. Caller?
I believe in the silence the caller is with us in a very circular fashion.
Hello.
Caller, welcome. Hello.
Hey, caller.
Congested tonight on the loops of the nation's roadways.
This another form of loop, but the winding are too thick, making the snap a bit slow at times, too much density. Tell us what you are feeling, caller.
I feel that it is like a clot of blood in a diseased artery, and that as the blood cells pack behind the congestion, they wait to explode forth in fatal aneurysm, releasing us from the tired bonds of life and exploding us into the great beyond.
You know, there is an interesting effect that can occur in situations such as this, and we can see it in the fluid-filled capillary or artery, as you say, or also in the stretched rubber band, but not if the rubber band is unstretched. And this is the support of wave-like motions. If there is a tension in the rubber band, or if there is pressure in the artery, then a little bit of a push or a shake on one end may propagate down the end to the other end, and a communication is possible without the transport of matter.
So what you are saying, Zoro, is that the discomfort of the band, the tension, which is so generally undesirable, has this amazing consequence, which is music, which is a vision, which is sound and harmony.
Yes, it is a vibration which may link us together from long distances.
Now, yes, color.
The tension in the band before the cutting is the very stuff of society. By cutting the band and exploding from the traffic, we can escape the loop and transcend.
It is true, but if you drive off the road, you will have no way to convey information to those who are on the other end.
Caller, I'd like to adjust your analogy. Perhaps thinking of it as a clot in an artery will be making you uncomfortable and angry inside. Perhaps think of it as a very intricate dance of which you are a part, and the pauses are required to make the music flow with the motion of the cars.
So that the traffic itself places the driver in the seat, part of a symphony, a chorus.
Exactly.
Ah, this is much more beautiful. This helps my psyche because I have suffered for these many hours.
I think
with the anger and discomfort that's common to my fellow motorists.
And
your new analogy helps me transcend my base bonds and demon enemies.
And it's so wonderful to do this because I feel also, but just hearing you, that there is a release of tension. But I also think that what's so wonderful about being with so many other people is the opportunity to connect with them, to wave a fellow motorist forward, to say gently to them, I care. I care about you also arriving to your home and communicating the experience.
I have that feeling every time I'm stuck in traffic.
That you regard it as...
But that the people around me care about me, and that I'm just a particle in an energy field, and there's a sense of oneness, even if we're different, even if maybe the communication is hostile, I still feel that there's a connectedness.
I think even if someone responds negatively, if they take the gap that you have left with the car in front of you as for a safety purpose, as an opportunity to cut in front, that we can regard this as a moment to be gracious to a person, that we can think and make excuses for the other person, that we think in our minds, not this is this cur who is overcoming me and who regards his time as more valuable than mine, but instead think the poor soul, he is unable to care for me, perhaps he is under pressure also, perhaps he has a family member who is desperately in need of him arriving.
Turbulent flow is still productive. Turbulent flow, we're still all moving along the pipe.
Such a beautiful way of putting in color. And I found another exercise, which I used to do more commonly in my youth, about 10 years ago, to roll down my windows when traffic is completely stopped, and to begin to sing a song which everyone knows or is familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Yes, my favorite for this activity is John Jacob Jingleheimer
Schmidt.
Yes,
his name is my name too.
Yes. Find,
right.
It is very good for getting a response. Uh-huh. As you can tell, many people enjoy this number.
I actually, there was a whole group of us singing that on the Mass Pike last week, together in harmony. It was like a. You remember the old Pepsi commercial?
Is it the Coke one, perhaps?
Oh, maybe it was the Coca-Cola one.
I believe
the world to sing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
laugh,
much
good.
Like this.
Yeah. When things get really tight on the expressway, I just roll down the windows and I start singing. And you'd be surprised how often you can get the daily commute just singing in perfect harmony, just like the commercial.
And it's good to know that even in these times, these modern times we have, there is so much pessimism, but that we may still bond and share with one another.
Right. Even in gridlock, we all have the same goal.
In fact, it is true.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There is a great alignment there.
We're all going in the same direction.
Precisely.
But it's important to stay on the road, and it's important to stay in your vehicle.
Indeed, because I have witnessed experiences of extreme road rage, not here in Boston, but in other more ancient cities, where the consequences are more serious, because there may be a one-lane road, and one person behind the other, both of them simply boiling with anger, and the one in front will park his car, leave, and have an espresso.
Now that's not good for anyone.
That
is the ultimate blood clot.
Yes, it reminds us.
And the natural tendency, the anticoagulant in that blood clot tends to be violent response.
And that's
not good for anybody.
The pressure behind will build to a point that either serious damage is done to the organism or to the clot itself.
Mm-hmm.
And is the driving caller still with us? I think we lost the other caller.
Now, it really reminds us that sometimes a sacrifice on the personal level may be beneficial for the medium in which we are all a part.
Indeed, indeed. And I think it is important. It may be difficult when one is in the car to be of the frame of mind that one is when one is at home, relaxed, or looking on the ocean or the clouds. But if one can maintain the state externally.
Mm-hmm. Well, when reaching enlightenment, one realizes that it is not a challenge to be calm and collected and kind when one is comfortable physically. The challenge is to be comfortable and kind and mellow in situations in which you are enraged.
In which you are experiencing discomfort, this is the truer test. Well, if anyone would like to call in and share their discomfort or perhaps banish it, the number is 617-253-8810, and we just have 20 minutes left.
Well, if it would be possible, like I started to discuss when I first got on the phone, I am deep in the Nevada desert,
yes.
I arrived here several weeks ago, and I participated in an event that is really beyond description, and I don't know if any of you have ever heard of this Burning Man Festival.
Yes, we are familiar with that.
I experienced things on a level that is beyond my ability to describe.
Well, can you make an attempt for us?
Well, essentially, thousands of people descend into a barren desert, and the spirit is of creativity and togetherness and teamwork. But it's a level of chaos that's overwhelming, and I found myself conflicted and lost.
I think it's very interesting that this event it chooses a location whose archetype is very lonely and lifeless, and to come together for life and creativity in such a place, it's very poetic.
I think that's part of the intent. This is an environment that essentially doesn't sustain a life. Very alkaline environment, and I've heard people say that it's like trying to describe the color blue to someone who can't see. Trying to describe what the event is all about.
Well, perhaps the best way is to go through the senses one by one.
And caller, if perhaps you could describe it in a more general way, because I'm not sure all of our listeners are familiar with the event. My understanding, it's the construction of a temporary city.
That's exactly what it is. Basically, representatives from all over the world, people come in, set up camps, and this completely open expression, to the point where there's people set up artwork and mobile vehicles, big fire breathing mobile giant rubber duckies with wings and explosions, and there's blatant disregard for. There's an apparent blatant disregard for human boundaries, but yet there's
I'm very, very sorry.
But there's a respect. There's a respect and an ethos that is. There's a kindness to it. It's anarchy in its purest form, but not in a malicious manner.
Indeed. And I think to me this speaks very much to our discussion earlier about the rubber band, this idea that one may pluck the band and temporarily there is an existence there, which is there is energy in the band, and then the energy is released, and then it vanishes, and like the city there, it is simply a memory and does not exist physically again.
And I guess going into it, I had thought myself to be a very flexible person, but it took me to the outer limits of my perception. I guess I don't really have a point. I just wanted to share a little bit of a life experience.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I'm just having a hard time categorizing it. I'm having a hard time communicating about it because it's I've likened it to you know, when people get abducted by aliens and then they try to describe it to somebody, there's really no, you know, there's no way to communicate an alien abduction without sounding a little mad. And I guess since I've come back, I've stopped trying to communicate about it
because it is outside of so many common experiences.
There are no frames of reference, but I think also, Calder, if I may, the experience is so recent that it also takes a lot of self-reflection to process it. You know, that takes time, I think, also.
I lost my shoes and my briefcase, my bicycle. I found a lot of things as well. Things about myself.
Now, caller, you have said that you are still in the desert. How long do you intend for this to be your home? Has this city transformed your location more permanently? Or
I think the experience has transformed my being, so that I plan on being here infinitely.
That's a beautiful thing, because really, the more important than where is this idea of spiritually where you are, where you are mentally, what state you are in.
But since I'm going to be here infinitely, it would be nice if I had my shoes back.
Indeed, and how have you coped this long without the shoes? How was it that the shoes came to grow apart?
And they coped without you, do you wonder?
Well, I think the shoes are probably doing better than me. Since I'm here infinitely, I'm relying on the evolutionary process, but it's trying on my patience. It's very difficult to you know, evolve a pair of feet that is up to the task of withstanding the difficult and harsh elements of this barren desert.
Well, as many things, Carler, developing the nice, tough hide on your feet as we are intended to have, it takes time. You must walk on the hot sands for perhaps a month.
Well, I can also share with you what we used to do, Caller, which is that the easiest thing when one has lost one's shoes, like any disadvantage in the desert, it can mean death when you are remote, when you are far from a dwelling place or a camp or something. So customarily what one would do is, at the first oasis, is to take some bark and to bind it to the bottom of the feet. And this is a temporary protection.
Ah, yes, a kind of sandal, I understand.
Precisely. It is very tempting to bind a rock to the bottom of the feet, but it is a very dangerous thing. It's the texture is wrong, and the temperature can reach great extremes.
And I think we have a as human beings, we have a tendency to want something, if not organic, at least something with organic properties to be the bearing surface between ourselves and the earth itself, lest we become not only physically callous, but emotionally callous. There's a difficult balance in life.
Yes, physically and metaphysically.
Right, because we don't want to be so ruggedized that we lose our sensitivity.
Indeed, and I was having a discussion earlier today about the hardness of life in a city, that there is, it's so rare to feel the soil between one's toes.
The cool grass between your toes as well. And I believe that this separates us when we are in the city, when we are not surrounded by green things, by trees and grass and flowers. We forget that we are part of this system.
But now I've come far away from anything green and organic. I descended into what was a temporary city, but now I'm just in a barren wasteland of solitude. And so I need to look within to find the strength to carry on here until once again the city descends around me and I have human contact that will sustain me both emotionally and I'm lacking in supplies, not only spiritually, but I ran out of water in a literal sense.
Well, Kyler, I was going to say that in the same sense you lose your connection with nature when you are in a city, so can you lose your connection with humanity when you are in isolation. And this can be very beneficial for a period of time, but not for the indefinite.
But it's funny, you know, sometimes I find a densely populated city to be the loneliest place in the world, and sometimes I can feel very, very together with the universe in absolute solitude as I am right now.
I concur.
But there is, much like the calluses and the feet and the traffic and the rubber band, there's a balance.
Absolutely a balance. And I think, actually, I think this is a great point, because before embarking on the desert, I would always, before embarking on a journey alone, I would take the time to meditate and to appreciate the human connection that I had, because when you are alone, it is so easy to feel despair, especially when there is no water, when you've lost your shoes. It's so easy to feel to lose the will to continue to exist. I've never performed this ritual before leaving my home, before entering a city with many people, but I think similarly it is required, because it is so easy to imagine oneself simply perishing in a sea of people.
Well, and I often spend stretches of time deep in the forest communing with the animals, and before I return to the city, I do take a moment and inhale the scent of fresh air and feel the dewdrops on my face and the trees, listen to them shimmering in the wind.
Now, if on your journey of all that shimmering of wind and trees and if you found an abandoned motorized skateboard, would you claim it as your own?
Well, Kyler, if it is abandoned, then it belongs to everyone.
But what if it's only temporarily abandoned, and the previous owner of said motorized skateboard, maybe if given the opportunity, would reclaim it at some point?
It's a difficult judgment.
Well, if the skateboard appears fresh and warm, perhaps it is safe to say that the owner is nearby, but if it appears somewhat worn or it's covered with dirt...
I think there is
some grace period there in which you must give the owner ample opportunity to find his way back to his motorized skateboard before,
or perhaps to guard it for him for a little bit and discover if he returns.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, and I think necessity at the end of life and at the end of the band controls one action, and so it is that our actions are controlled by time. So thank you for joining us, caller, and indeed I do hope that you are rejoined with your shoes.
I thank you very much for your sentiments. I feel refreshed.
As do all of us here. Thanks to Aurora for joining us.
Namaste.
And thanks to Zoro.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks also to the many callers that did join us and the ones that tried and could not get on the show tonight. Thank you for calling and for listening. This has been Music for Humans. I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran, and we're here every Friday at 7 p.m. on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Stay tuned for Radio Ninja. Ma'a salama.
Safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
He came from outer space to save the human race. A creature with a dream to entertain the children of the night. The rest, as they say, became history.
Magogo. The Show Show. Saturdays, 8 p.m. WMBR, 88.1 FM. Cambridge.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Tune in exactly 24 hours from now for the show with Magogo. That's pretty catchy, Magogo. Good one. So yeah, my name is L-Train, and you can tune in Friday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. at WMBR 88.1 Cambridge.